There's a beginning, and then
you're listening to 108.9 FM. Adjust your frequencies, fine-tune your mind and brains as you prepare to fall through the trap.
The universe is a dream of magic.
Welcome back to episode 2 of 108.9 Trapdoor Radio with me, your host, Lloyd Barnes. Yo, this week we have a crazy jam-packed episode for you. I just want to say before we dive into everything, like the magic news, what new products are out there, the Q&A that you've sent ridiculous amounts of questions for, I'm going to try and answer as many as I can, like rapid fire style. Before we dive into all of that, I just want to say a huge thank you to people for listening to my podcast. I put it out there expecting to have maybe like 100 views maximum or 100 listens because podcasts perform completely differently to magic videos that I make. And I've literally had like 20 times that. There's like over 1,600 on YouTube, which just blows my mind because people don't tend to watch videos where it's just somebody talking to a camera on my channel. So thanks. And then the amount of podcast listens are mind-blowing. So thank you all so much for tuning in. I hope you're enjoying the format. I hope you like this whole like late night mystery radio show theme, or that we're disguising our podcast or we're dressing our podcast up as. A big shout out to Mark Elson for giving me a shout out in his weekly newsletter called The Fig, or The Metabolic Fig. Like I said, go and check that out if you haven't already. It's the best source for new products that you'll find anyway on the magic webs, on the magic spider webs. But this week, yeah, like I said, we've got a jam-packed episode. We're going to dive into some news, what's been sort of on my radar, what sort of drama has potentially been happening in the magic industry. Then we'll do the Q&A, and then if there's some time, we'll try and keep this like a tight hour. If there's some time, then we'll go into some magic music. But this is, for all intents and purposes, this is going to be an uncut episode. We're going to stream it to you as if I'm literally live on the radio to you wherever you are in the world. So first things first, let's get straight into magic news, what's been happening. If you're listening or watching this on YouTube, you'll see some you'll see my browser coming up on the screen, and I'll be going through what's on Safari. But don't worry, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Music or any other podcast platform, then I'm going to explain to you what I'm seeing, what's going on anyway. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about is and pardon the language, forewarning, there will be swearing in this. I am giving you my unfiltered conscious stream. I want to talk about Oz Perlman. And sort of like his new meteoric rise to fame. The guy seems to have gotten famous like 5 times in his lifetime. And he's never dropped out of fame. It's just he sort of keeps not, I don't know if reinventing himself is the right word, but he sort of keeps coming, bringing something new every single time. And it's dope. What's happening or what's sort of driving this is that at least this time around, what it feels like is that he went on the Joe Rogan podcast, right? Went on Joe Rogan, and I'm going to make my screen a little bit bigger here. Went on Joe Rogan, and of course, you go on Joe Rogan, and it's basically like, now everybody around the world knows who you are. It's the most famous podcast web show that there is. He goes on Joe Rogan, and he absolutely blows his fucking mind. He does mentalism, which, if you watch any of like Joe Rogan's stuff, I'm not a huge Joe Rogan fan, but I can't deny that I've seen his videos. They pop up. He is probably like one of the most like voracious, horrendous magic spectators that there could be. He's like a vivacious critic. He's a skeptic. He does not give anybody an inch. And he doesn't give a fuck who you are, how big your name is, how much of a legend in the magic industry you are. He doesn't care. He just wants to sort of debunk you. And there's a famous episode where Banachek, goes on Joe Rogan and Joe just calls him out. He's like, Banachek does invisible deck and Joe's like, let me look at those cards. And Banachek doesn't know what to do. He's like, well, let me show you this nail. And then he basically doesn't give him an inch to move and he calls him out. It's really, 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 really gut-wrenching to watch as a Banachek fan and as a fan of mentalism and magic in general. it's hard to watch someone tear it into our art form like that. But also, it's, you know, it's on Banachek. He didn't do his research into, because Banachek is one of the smartest minds in Magic. I don't think he really went in there understanding who his audience was and what was going to happen. If he watched any other magicians on or people like that or any research into Joe Rogan, he would have seen that, okay, I've got to bring the type of material which can be examined in a mentalism sense and a physical sense, and that didn't happen, and it didn't work out for him. Whereas Blaine goes on, and Blaine does stuff which pretty much can't be backtracked in the moment, such as like any type of like a mental dye effect and just putting straight up needles through your arm. That stuff is, for all intents and purposes, legit and real, and like we're using like a mnemonica stack deck. You know, even the harshest critics in the world or skeptics in the world, they don't know what's going on, especially if you do some false shuffles with that type of stuff. Very, very hard to break through the fooling barrier of a stack deck. And, you know, Blaine's the master at, like, knowing what to do to the right people. He knows when to do a watch steal on presidents. He knows when to bring out the spike through hand or the sword through arm on Ricky Gervais. He knew to use something as fooling as mental die on Joe Rogan. And you know, it's why he's one of the greatest magicians of all time. But Oz Perlman goes on, and suddenly the world sort of sees a new side to Rogan in his reactions to it, because he's like, guess my pin number. And Oz Perlman does guess his pin number, to the point where Joe's like legitimately worried about it being exposed on the internet. And then doesn't have an answer for it. He's not like, oh, well, you've seen it. He's actually like, no, like you full on, you didn't look at it earlier. You didn't know what it was going to be. And you looked at it. And the interesting thing is this. This is the point I'm getting to. The reaction online, the comments online are completely different to almost anything I've ever seen with most magicians and mentalists. The general consensus from the magic fraternity or from the world isn't people exposing how Oz Perlman does this or guessing legitimate answers. Most people are just commenting in belief. And like, Oz Perlman is the real deal. And you know someone's good when everyone's fooled. So like, you look at the comments, there's some hilarious comments like, meanwhile, Theo's watching this thinking, that's them dark arts, boy. We had a guy one time. But like Joe saying, I don't like that when Oz guesses his pin code, one of the funniest moments on the show for me. Joe's reaction to Oz's trick during the first 30 minutes is exactly how witches got burned at the stake. Joe wanted to hit Oz with a spinning back kick when Oz figured out his pin code. Like, once, this is an interesting one. Once he gets Joe with one or two things, Joe starts trying to disguise his body language. It's hilarious. This whole episode was a threat. Not even Joe is safe. Like, in the top comments, no one is guessing the method. No one is explaining the method. And the same goes for it on Reddit. You look in Black Magic Fuckery, someone's posted, what the fuck's going on here? And this is the top comment on Reddit. And the guy says, this guy was on Joe Rogan 2 weeks ago, and since then, I've been losing my mind watching his videos. I'm a science-driven person, an atheist, and skeptical by nature, and this is fucking blowing my mind. I do not see how he could possibly do this without all these people being in on it. But at this point, he's done this to hundreds of athletes, musicians, actors, and that's the point. Oz is... There is no shortage of clips of Oz Perlman doing this to big name people that he just couldn't have stooged. He couldn't have said, hey, play along. And these people are just too big of stars, celebrities, and, you know, TV hosts, Joe Rogan, Shane Gillis, Mike Tyson, Charles Barkley, Joe Burrow, and hundreds of other people I could name. There is no way that all of these people are in on it. And not a single one has ever given a subsequent interview where they admitted it. And I've seen many where they talk about it and are still stunned by what he did. It's driving me crazy. I don't believe in magic, and he himself said he is not a psychic, and every psychic he's ever met is lying. So what the fuck is going on here? Next comment down says, he said, or hinted before, that it's a combination of priming people and reading body language. He's just incredibly good at it. good at it, of course. I still don't know how it's possible, but apparently it is. And this is the big takeaway for me in this is that, and of course, throughout like the comments, there are people just flat out like trying to guess and throw suggestions out there. But the overall overwhelming response is, people are stunned. And it's the nature in which he's doing these things as well. The way he always is going on there and like certain celebrities or whatever will say, do this, guess that. And he's ready for it. And of course, we as mentalists and magicians know to a certain extent what his methods are, or the very loose construct of his methods. Some of them I don't know, because he's obviously developed his own things. There are some things which I do know. But on the whole, it's so amazing. It's so inspiring. And I think everyone has to be looking to, when they perform, especially mentalism, this is the standard you've got to try and get to. I'm beyond in some respect, but like, this is the standard you've got to try and get to. You can't be going on to perform to people in the modern era, where in a time where something can be easily searchable. And I've spoken about this in length. I've spoken about this many times. I lectured at Blackpool. I opened up Blackpool 2 years ago, and I did my own build change. And I stood on stage and I said, this is my own build change. I really like this build change. I don't know necessarily whether it's better than Extreme Burn. Objectively, it's not. And it also is, because I'm biased and some people might like it, some people won't. But the reason I'm standing up on here performing my build change is because my worst fear as a magician is going out, because my style of magic is supposed to be organic. It's supposed to be in the moment, or I try to be like spontaneous. And if someone says, hey, I heard you're a magician, can you show me a trick? I want to say, oh, I didn't have anything planned. Do you have a bill? I want to perform like that. That's how I do it 99% of my life. My worst fear is then doing a trick and someone going, oh, it was great. I also seen Dynamo do that. Oh, I love that trick. It was amazing. I saw Justin Flom teach that online, or Rick Lax. Like, if you're not doing your own material, or at least taking material and disguising it to make it your own when you're performing to people in 2025, where everything is searchable, then you're not working hard enough. So the reason I do a lot of my own material is because if you do an invisible deck these days, that unfortunately can be searched. Okay, it can be found. I think misdirection magic is a good type of magic to perform live, because you can't just sort of like expose, you can't search for a static secret in misdirection. Oftentimes it's improv and on the fly stuff. And the same goes for like mem deck improv work and other things like that. But on the whole, if there's like a boxed trick that comes out, and I'm all for that, right? But you've got to dress it up in a way that makes it your own, in such a way that can't be easily backtracked. For example, Craig Petty has my favorite presentation of the invisible deck ever. And his presentation of it is that he gets first of all, his phone rings, and it's a phone call from the future. He answers that phone call and speaks to his future self, who has spoken to the future participant, who has told him what card to turn around. He hangs up the phone call, and he acts like it's a whole play on time and like looping back and forward in time. And it's a really believable presentation, even though he's actually, you know, doing magic, which is unbelievable. But it's a really like well thought out structure to it. And even though it's an invisible deck at the heart of it, you can't, if somebody was to Google that, they're not going to Google the trick where the card was backwards. They would be looking for the trick where he got a phone call from the future. And unfortunately, that's buried deep within a project that you're not going to just find in a top SEO search like an invisible deck. So I think it's so good to make sure that it's so important, it's pivotal that the magic you perform is disguised in such a way that it's not easily searchable. It's that it's in a way it sort of takes away what the point of it is. Like if it's just a card turned over in the deck, well, now let's turn it into that trick where you travel through time and space or whatever. The other thing is that, and this is sort of a sidetrack, but I went on this big, and I've always been on it, but like slow motion magic. If you've been following me for 20 years, then it's strange that I do anything other than this. To those of you that are new to me, you're probably thinking of me like as like a gimmick creator or like a app guy. But slow mo magic was like my bread and butter for like the first 10 12 years of my magic career, and it was because the internet was in its infancy and I wanted my magic to be rewindable. I wanted my magic, because we're in a visual world now, everyone's on their phone. Magic is viewed more on phones than it is in real life, and it's not going backwards. And I thought, well, if my magic has that potential to be seen by billions of people, I don't want to do magic that can be rewound and understood. That's why so much of my magic used to be slow motion. And it is still. It's just, I've just explored many of the plots and sort of got the solutions I want for many of the plots. But there's always more. But I want to be able, people to be able to watch my stuff on loops, on reels and shorts, and just watch it over and over and not see, be able to backtrack it. And again, it goes into that mentality of, you have to sort of future-proof your magic when you go out and perform. When you're showing people stuff, especially harsh critics or in a world where people can just search things, you need to, at least for me, the magic you do has to be bulletproof. And bulletproof not just beyond your own satisfaction or to your own satisfaction. It needs to be bulletproof where, you know, maybe you have a friend that always tries to figure out your tricks. Go and show them the set that you intend on performing to your next gig or your next big TV show or the next interview that you're going to do, whatever it's going to be, your next big event. Show your most honest friend and say, come back to me in an hour with how you think they're all done. However he thinks they're all done, or they think they're all done, he, she, whatever, then if they're right and they guess the method, change that method or change that presentation or change that trick. I'm not saying that you have to for everything. And it could be that your friend is just used to seeing all of your material, so they know your style, so they can anticipate how you do things, the telegraphing that comes with that. But really be brutal and think, how can I future-proof my methods? Like, what can I do to sort of cover my bases? Now, I know talking about like Banachek on Joe Rogan is like an extreme case. I mean, Rogan is one of these people, he's a skeptic, and I think a lot of his audience, he knows that like playing into that skeptic arm is good for his retention and his viewership, because he tries to debunk everything, and you're not necessarily going to get that reaction in your day-to-day life when your day-to-day average spectator and participant. But don't be naive and think that also these are not the silent conversations that are happening in people's heads that are too friendly to repeat them to you. So, I mean, I've spoken about this a lot of times before. I just think it's something that it needs to be thought about. And to see Oz Perlman out here sort of waving the flag and coming out here and doing mentalism, which people are seriously questioning whether what he's doing is real. The last time I sort of seen this en masse was Darren Brown. I still think to this day the general populace believes what Darren Brown does is real. And the other person, of course, is Blaine, because Blaine blurs that line between doing things for real and tricks, where he can put something through his arm and he will mix it up with a bit of jazz magic and other things. So that's the first thing that I've seen this week. And it's just, I haven't even watched the full video, but it's just seeing that like collective consciousness of the world going on. The next thing that I've seen out is, and I'm sort of catching the tail end of this, and I'm not fully well read on it, but it's an apology from Jason Ladanier. I always get his name confused. I fully apologize. I met him briefly once at the Session convention, and he was just the nicest person and most disgustingly skilled human being with a deck of cards I think I've ever seen. And being completely honest with you, I don't even know how he does half of his stuff. But this is what this topic is about. It's a video that's come out, and it says, "My apologies." All right, so I'll play the. If you're listening, you should still hear the audio anyway, and you should be able to see it. But here we go.
Hey, what's up, Reddit? How you doing?
I'm gonna make a video here because I have to admit I got something completely wrong here. I made a huge mistake.
Back in like 2016 or so, I created this poker chip trick. Oh my god, amazing! Right, so you spin a chip, lands on a card. And it's amazing. And I was going to release that in my third book. But I just found out that doesn't belong to me anymore. Crazy, right? This guy, Ankliobot, he posted the same video here in Reddit. And I asked him to take the video down because it doesn't belong to him. But then he informed me that doesn't belong to you anymore. And the reason is because a lot of other people are doing it. So it doesn't belong to me. So I'll take it right out of the book.
My apologies. Spin to win, no more.
And the logic here, I mean, follow the logic, right? If you own four cars, if you own four automobiles, and three of them are stolen, well, that fourth one, they have the right to have that car. That's not, they can't steal it from you because you don't even really own that car, right? First three, fine. Last one, you know, you got to deal with it. But either way, that's amazing. And then also, this guy informed me that if other people in the comments say that it's okay, that's fine too. So if you create something, but other people in the comments have an opinion about it, that opinion from someone else on Reddit, that trumps my, I mean, I'm the creator, but that negates my feelings on this at all. And then also, let's take a look at Ricky J. Had some points on this as well. Theft annoys me more than anything else. The purloining of effects from another magician. Some people think it's massive to steal the secrets of nuclear weapons, but to steal a card move is trivial. They're wrong. Well, you know what, Ricky? You thought that, and guess what? You're dead. What do you know? So Ricky got it wrong, too. But anyway, if you want to learn how to do this trick, AnkLeobot, you can put this in your book, because obviously it doesn't belong to me anymore. So if you have any questions on how the trick works, reach out to this guy, because he'll share the secrets. And my apologies for wasting everybody's time thinking that, you know, if you create something, it belongs to you. So enjoy the routine. I wish I could have shared it with everybody, but not mine anymore.
I'm laughing because obviously the candor in which Jason is saying this is he's obviously being sarcastic. But essentially what it seems has happened is Jason had posted a video, and the video from what I can gather within the comments was like a challenge. Like, hey, guys, like he always does, like, see if you can figure this out. In his way, like he plays like the ultra confident, super overconfident trickster or con man with a deck of cards. And basically he said, you know, I challenge you to sort of do this. And somebody actually, it sounds like, actually took that as a chat, that challenge is real, recreated the same effect, and then took ownership of that effect and tried to say, basically, everyone does this, now it's mine, fuck you. And some of the top comments on Reddit, like someone says, like, that motherfucker really said, it don't belong to you no more. Jesus fucking Christ. And I thought the conversation when they asked for advice went so well. And it's just sort of a reflection. I think it's an interesting sort of scenario. This happens so often in Magic where somebody will create an effect, or they'll share a piece of magic. Somebody else will see that, think about how it could be done, find a way to achieve it, and then think, well, I didn't know how he did his, but I've done, this is my way of doing it. This is now mine. And in those, like, there are occasions where the method you go for is completely different, and in those situations, this is kind of an okay thing to do. I mean, especially if it's like a general plot, like, let's say you watch David Blaine throw a card through the window, and you think, oh my god, I want to learn how to do that. I'm gonna come up with a method, and your method involves using a telescope with a fishing rod and a little electric magnet and a motor that like goes and shoots the signed card maybe from like an envelope down a little pipe into your pocket, and it ends up stuck to the window. And then you find out what Blaine's method was, which is like whatever, you know. But you find out, like, no, dude, I did it. That's nothing like mine. And I ain't never seen anyone do it that badly before, or that ridiculous before. Then it's kind of like yours. But in this situation, you know, it seems like he stumbled upon the same method, and there was like, well, mine now. And the way that it was handled was to sort of poke fun at him. And I think that's okay. I think it's okay to do that. I mean, everybody's so afraid to step out of line these days or say something which could upset or offend someone. And I think, you know, the guy was, the AnkLeobot was bullish enough to say, fuck you, it's mine now. And I think it's okay to have a bit of mud thrown back his way, or a bit of tongue-in-cheek fun. Really all Jason did was hold the mirror up and have fun at it. But it's good to see this. And I think what it is, because Jason, I think what I like about this, well, what's interesting about this is that Jason's magic reaches the lay audiences. Much more than magicians. I mean, he gets millions of views. And the lay audiences are seeing these things happen. And I think it's interesting that they are now being exposed to sort of like the ethics and the moral grounds of magic, and that, you know, you can't just steal. And I know it's been covered in movies, for example, like the illusionist and what's the, I can't even think of the one. There was two movies at the same time, one with Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale, and the other one, which The Prestige, which is the best one, sorry, and The Illusionist. And they talk about, you know, it sort of tales all this time about magicians get competing over methods and things. But yeah, it's kind of like a modern retelling of that story in a way. Someone said, look, dude, this is all bullshit. I can't believe you have to deal with all this. People just end up stealing tricks and no credits. Typical shit. But yeah, so that was a couple of things I saw on my radar in terms of magic drama this week. And also, one more thing. I haven't watched it yet, but Justin Willman has a new magic special out on Netflix. Haven't seen it yet. It was released it was released yesterday, so haven't even had a chance to see it. But from what it looks like, and every time I try and watch the trailer in my private browser, it blocks me. But from what it looks like, it's his stage show. I think this is fucking brilliant. It's such a brilliant. If you give it a platform like magic, like Netflix, doing a magic stage show is instantly a smart choice. I have seen Justin's other specials on Netflix, and I wasn't the last week we spoke about Cyril on AGT, and I was going back and forth in the comments with somebody last night who got pretty upset that I they said basically that I was influenced by the judges. I was influenced by the judges' feedback, and if I hadn't seen him get two X's, then I would have thought just as, you know, gone along with him being the GOAT of all time. And I said that's actually not the case. A, I consulted on AGTs and BGTs, on finalists, on winners. I know what I like about an AGT and a BGT entry, and I absolutely would not have advised to do a card trick like that, especially for his establishing. People call it the first audition. I call it the establishing audition. It's the one that sort of sets you for the entire show. I would not have advised to do that. And that would have been my same opinion, whether Cyril was on there or not. But I don't want to take away from my views on Cyril. Like, I met him briefly once. He is literally one of the GOATs, one of the most, especially his old magic specials. That was some of the most inspiring magic I ever saw. And if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't create in some of the style that I do. Like, I've been heavily influenced by it. But I don't think everyone's bulletproof, no matter who they are, especially me. And what I said was, like, look, I said to the commenter, I'm fair play to him. I think it's good that some people are willing to step forth and put their beliefs out there and sort of challenge a commentary, like, especially, like, from, like, I'm putting my thoughts out there. It's good to have a discussion, and it helps sort of clarify my own views. Or sometimes I'm willing to change my mind too, because I think that's the sort of the beautiful thing about online discussions or like a little radio show like this. But one of the things I said was, like, you must have a favorite musician, right? You must do. Most people have a favorite band, singer, artist, right? And they put out multiple albums. They might have 10 albums out in their career. And surely, I can't think of any one person around the world that listens to a random album from their favorite artist and doesn't skip at least one song. Like every single artist doesn't have a perfect run of every single song on every single album being a 10. And there's some that they're good songs, but you just skip them. And I kind of feel like this was in the same vein with Cyril, like literally goated in magic. But one of those very, 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 very rare instances where just didn't hit right. And that's all right, because he's still a GOAT. He can't be taken away from him. And I'm pretty sure it's going to spawn him to often be even better. For the next audition is probably going to be like miracle level, when we're all going to be like, fuck. Okay, this is why he's Cyril. But that being said, yeah, so I go back to Justin Willman. I watched a few of his other specials, and I wasn't the biggest fan of them, and I won't go into any exposure, but I'm of the firm belief that magic on a magic special should always be the real act. I'm trying to be very careful here, but like, if I was having my own magic special filmed, there would be every trick in that special would be performed live there and then, and everything at home would be seen exactly the same way. It has to be real, even though deceptive. And there was just elements of it like that where, you know, I don't know. I'm such a fan of Justin Wilmer. I just wasn't a fan of his magic specials as much. And I hope that no one gets upset, especially, you know, Justin. Anyway, that being said, kind of reminds me of like Adam Sandler in his 100% Fresh special on Netflix. Came out and just did his stand-up comedy show, like 50-odd years old. And it's the best, one of the best stand-ups I've ever seen. Me and Katie love it. And it's kind of like Justin here is doing what he's absolutely fucking phenomenal at, which is I've always seen him as like a sort of close-up stage performer. And I haven't even seen the special yet, but I think it should be on everyone's radar. You should all watch it. And I literally just hope it's his one-man show. Because when he does magic like that, when I've seen him doing his one-man show in the past on other various places around the internet, he's incredible. He's like literally one of the best magicians in the world. And he's got this perfect style that like his style of magic is, it bridges a gap. Like it makes it accessible to everyone. You can't not really like him for a start, and you can't not really like his tricks. There's nothing hokey about it. There's nothing like that makes you go, oh God, you know, nothing makes you watch his magic and think like this is, and I'm saying this as if I'm a lay person, you know, but you don't watch Justin do magic and think this guy's lame. Oh, look at his top hat and tails, and look at the jazz hands and the glitter. Like, he's just a cool guy, does cool magic, fucking hilarious to listen to. And it's the type of magic that, like, I'm proud for other people to see. I'm like, oh, this is what magic's all about. Like, people think that it's all top hats and tails and dubs, but really, like, the good magicians out there, this is the shit that they're doing. Like, this is the stuff that you don't see as often. It's not those, like, lame Instagram videos of people pretending to, oh, look, my barista didn't know in this all setup, and it's, like, just to get hits or whatever. This is the good shit, man. This is the magic caviar. People like Justin Wilmer in their one-man shows. And if it looks like for all intents and purposes, this is what he's chosen to go for his Netflix special, then magic is going to be in a very good place after it. And so yeah, haven't seen it yet, but hopefully, like, you know, no dissing him whatsoever. I wasn't a huge fan of his other specials. This one probably going to be amazing and do so much for the art of magic that it makes me happy on many, many levels. So I'm trying to keep this to like a tight hour, and I have a lot of Q&A questions. The reality is, this week in terms of products, I'm not seeing anything that's blown my mind. I did get put onto a test flight for a new magic app called Photomorph, and I've had a quick look at the instructions. I've set it up on my phone. This is a magic app that allows you to send a photo to your audience, to your spectator, and that photo can change either visibly or on the offbeat on their phone. And on the surface, it sounds very basic, but it's very open source, which means you can do a lot of things with it. You can do a lot of exciting things with it. I've loosely played with the idea of changing a photo on a participant's phone. Actually, I was doing this at the session showing this basic thing at the session to James Keatley. But let me open up the browser window real quick because it's gone off. I was doing this James Keatley idea, but Guillaume Fieri, I think his name is. I need to double check. But what this basically what this app is like a full system, a full structured way of doing this, and it's really well thought out. Some great ideas on there, from some big names too. But think about this as a premise. You can send it, like, say you send a photo of a playing card to someone's phone. You can now change that photo in their phone, in their gallery, their Real Photos app, and be left with nothing for them to find. That's in a nutshell. You can use it for a bunch of different things. One of the things I was thinking about, and I don't know if it's explained in there, but you could use it as like a force, right? So you could show them a photo of a book, for example. And the book is the Ted Karmolovich Mother of All Book Test Words on the page. So you send them that. They look at a word. They think of it, like a big interesting word. They think of it. As they're thinking of it, you now reverse or do your magic, whatever it's going to be, to the image. And now you change it to a completely normal page. And in that aspect, then they can't backtrack it or something along those lines. So I think there's got a lot of scope, a lot of things you can do to play with it. You could have photos of a face and then make a playing card image appear or vanish in the eye, even though they've looked at it. And you can do a bunch of different stuff. That's the latest thing that I've been playing with over the last, like, since last night. Really, I brought on the test flight for him. Never met the guy, but he seems super lovely. Very, 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 very well-made app. And I'll tell you what it's called again, just so that if you guys want to go and pick it up yourself, it's called Photomorph. I don't know if you can see the icon on screen there. No, not really. It's called Photomorph. I'm trying to find the, here we go. There's an image. If you're watching this online, you can see the little nose. I'm going to show you. Come on, focus. Anyway, super interesting, super cool. Really, really, really well made. And that's like the latest thing. Obviously, on Tuesday, the 24th, I am doing a live, joint live stream with all the guys, Craig and Bo, for the launch of the Savantech. Super excited for you to see that. Again, no hype. Don't get excited for this. This is going to be boring. 4 out of 10 release. Just a couple of card tricks. No hype. No hype. And then after last week's episode, I went off and I shot in Cardiff City a new Murphy's thing that's coming out. We got some crazy reactions and beautiful, gorgeous footage. There'll be more info on that coming soon. I can't share more about it, but the shoot went really well. I was able to eat. In the UK, TGI Fridays is actually good, or used to be good, so I don't often eat it. But I managed to have TGI Fridays. That was like the highlight as well. And of course, hanging out and jamming. And the day after, well, the artist is Jake Keane. So Jake Keane, the co-host of the Black Art Podcast with me, that's the artist. He's got one of the best things ever. I can't say more until it's close to release. But the day after, he actually came down to my place, Porthcawl in South Wales. And we hung out. We went and got some coffee and some smoothies. And we started jamming. And one of the things I did was, I had this, if you could see this on the screen. This is one, this big, huge bag is bag one of four of Cardiff Magic Society. It's been running for 100 years, I think, about 100 years. Was getting rid of an old massive section of their library. And these are all magic books and magic magazines from some as like back as far as the 40s and the 50s. One of the things we did was take four of these books to the coffee shop. This is Magigram. And we started going through them, looking at old tricks and looking at old methods for these tricks, because some of the best, cleverest methods are hidden away in old school books and methods. And anyway, we got through a quarter of one magic pamphlet, booklet thing from the 50s, and discovered, I'd seen this principle a long time ago, but literally written up like a Martin Gardner thing, where it's like one or two lines. We rediscovered this principle, and we started jamming on this idea, and it's turned into potentially this amazing, amazing, current, very modern, very organic, very fun, new piece of mentalism. And so we've come up with a bunch of different ideas, bunch of different presentations, and just from like grabbing an old booklet from 70 years ago, if it was the 50s one, and going through the first few pages and going, oh, that sounds interesting. Actually, how could we do this? And how far could we take this? And what could we do? Blah, 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 blah. From there, we ended up creating something which is absolutely amazing. And so we're going to put that together and then just sort of try and find a way to share it with you all. I think that's the goal anyway. So there'll be more coming on that soon, but it's super deceptive. And it is an old math principle, but no one plays with this. Like, definitely not the way in which we're approaching it. So that we can find, of course, there's nothing new under the sun, not even that principle. But this way is pretty, cool. Anyway, we're coming up on that hour mark soon. It's like 20 minutes left for the show. It might run over. But for now, I'm going to try and spitfire through the Q&A's section of the episode. So I've got a bunch of questions here. I'm not going to be able to answer them all. I haven't got them all in here. I only put out like the APB last night to ask questions for this week's episode. Have a little drink of water there. And yeah, I just dumped in as many responses as I could quickly see before setting up the shoot. So that being said, question one. From Dr. Daniel Rothschild, why another podcast and not the Magic Podcast or Black Art? Just as I explained in episode one, life is very chaotic at the minute because of a baby, the house renovation, and trying to align my schedules with Jake and Craig. And it's my issue, not theirs, because I have to film at random times of the day based on when the baby's sleeping or when I have free time in between doing stuff at Murphy's and filming for my Patreon and things. I just can't make it work. Like I need to be able to just sit down and record this quick and then bounce. Whereas to set up a podcast, it does take like, you know, oh, let's just sit down here. You know, with the Magic Podcast with Craig, it's always like a 3-hour-long podcast too, which I really like can't dedicate that to at the minute. So this is here just so I explain episode one, just to like get my life schedule working perfectly. Next question. What is your opinion on magicians building their own gimmicks instead of buying? Yeah, I mean, this is me. Almost all the material I perform and create is my own. So my opinion of it is imperative. But I think as a magician, we should be able to, if we break a gimmick, we should be able to rebuild it. We should be able to craft. We should be able to be a master of our art. Like being a magician isn't about just performing a trick that you've bought off a shelf. It's everything. I think like you should embody being a magician. Like everything about you and your life should be that magic lifestyle. So, you know, you should be able to make your own tricks. You should be able to write your own scripts. You should be able to design your own prop. You should be able to perform with your own style, your own unique USP. Like I very much, you should always be ready to perform a piece of magic at a moment's notice. 24/7, literally, you need to have proper mentalism. You need to have borrowed object tricks all up here. Like there's so much that comes with that. So opinion on magicians building their own gimmicks instead of buying? Yes, there are great gimmicks that you can't make yourself, like things that need molding and electronics and stuff. And of course, you need to buy them. But I think you should be able to. I think everyone should be able to, no matter age, creed, skill, ability, everything. Everyone should be able to make gimmicks. Next question. What is the best trick you released and the best trick you reviewed? From Luke the Magician. Best trick I've released is probably, for me, it's Lux. 100% Lux. Or Cognito. Lux or Cognito are my two things that I'm really proud of, and I'm not judging this by, I mean, they're both probably my top two sellers of all time, or top five, because a lot of things are done around the same, but I'm really proud of some of the creative thought behind them and how outside the box I sort of stepped with them. Also Cypher 2, that was the first magic calculator that forced the toxic number whilst taking in information about them, and it sort of set the magic world on fire, and there's been many versions of it since. I created that with Will Jones years and years and years ago, I don't even use it anymore, but I'm super proud of it. There's quite a few things. Probably for me, the number one thing I'm thinking, best one over, if I had to pick one, gun to my head, is Lux. Definitely Lux. I'm so proud of it. The people around the world. I got a message from an email from a YouTuber called Brandon Ellis. I think I mentioned this last week, literally like 2 weeks ago, saying he got a brand new job with it. Some of the biggest magicians in the world use it. And yeah, I'm so proud of it. I do regret the marketing campaign behind it. I think in retrospect, the size to which it was blown, people were expecting like an actual miracle when it came out, and when it wasn't a real miracle, then you're only open to being like chat on, and that kind of happened. But yeah, Lux is phenomenal. Best trick I've ever reviewed. Best trick I've ever reviewed. best trick. I really loved the Turner Watch by Rory Adams when he put that out. So phenomenal. Turner Watch is really, really good. When I performed Craig Petty's Chop Cup Chop by Craig Petty, that made Katie cry. And I always say a magic reviewer is only, you can only, there are two types of magic reviewers. There are people that just overlook the product, and there are magic reviewers. A magic reviewer, you can only be called a magic reviewer if you perform the trick. If you don't perform the trick, then you're only given a review in theory. It's only a theoretical review, because there are things that happen within the performance that you can't anticipate. And certain things that you think might suck are amazing, and the things that you may love as a magician with your lizard brain suck to an audience. And so I went in performing Chop. I've never done the Chop Cup routine before. I didn't know how it was going to play. I know that everyone else loves it, and I know how good like the Chop Cup in general is, but I had no idea. And then I perform it. Kaylee starts crying. She said it reminded her of the first time she'd seen me do magic, and yeah, a whole bunch of things. So best trick I reviewed. Yeah, I think Chop, because of the reaction. I love Scotch and Whiskey by Tom Elderfield. I think that's really, really good. What else? Gosh, there's so many. So many. But in terms of review, those are two that I've reviewed that I adore. I'm trying to think now, what other reviews have I put up that are really good? But off the top of my head, those two things. I'm probably going to like kick myself when I remember something. Oh, yeah, that was the bomb. But yeah, top of my head, Scotch and Whiskey was really good. And Chop, because the reaction it got from Craig. Also, I loved Imagination by Taiwan G. G, isn't it? It goes by. Love that. What magic creation, released or upcoming, are you most proud of and why? Yeah, like I said again, like it's got to be Lux for me, I think, overall. It was something completely brand new. It came from like this. I was looking up at a shooting star and I just had this like lightning bolt, and everything sort of existed for the project, and it does something insane. And it's, yeah, so I think definitely Lux. The other thing that I put out was the Cohort Gaff deck, and I love Gaff decks. I was obsessed since the first ever one that I saw came out, and it was put in against reviews against 16 other Gaff decks that exist on the market, and it was rated the best one ever against them, and I was really proud of that. And I intended to go into that Gaff deck, changing the way Gaff cards should be perceived and exist in the way they exist. And I feel like I achieved that with it. And it was like a lifetime's work of like visual Gaff card magic. And I feel like I pushed some boundaries there and did some things that had never been done. And they worked. Not just like doing it for the sake of it, but they played off quite well. And it was a mixture of media. It wasn't just a Gaff card. I was trying to infuse them with videos that would make your eyes go funny. And then when you look at the card starts to optically morph. But then when it stops, it actually visually does morph and it's frozen, and different ways of presenting like 3D illusions that you could do in the real world. So probably Lux and the Cohort Gaff deck, although I just wish it was with a different back design. What are three magic, so Nick Magic says, what are three magic moments you would do in your life, when you meet up with friends and when you want to perform something? It really depends on who it is I'm meeting up with. If they've seen me do magic before, what I can pick up off them they'd be interested in. I always do crazy man's handcuffs in their hands with a third phase where the band vanishes whilst two, so I never touch anything. One participant is holding the bands from above, so the vertical band. One participant is holding the horizontal band. They're locked together, and then the vertical band slowly vanishes in the participant's hand. That's the third phase of it. I pretty much do that almost all the time. There's a lot of reasons why. If you're going to do a magic trick, if you bring out a deck of cards, some people can't say, oh, I've seen this one. It's happened to me. It probably happened to you. But if you put rubber bands in someone's hands and you're up at chest level, also, first of all, you get people looking over at you, so you establish yourself. But it's also, they go, no one says, I've seen this one. Everyone's like, what the fuck is about to happen? And then it actually pays off with this super slow motion visual moment, and there's nothing to find, nothing to get caught on. And then the third phase, like this, for me, it becomes this perfect kicker where they think, now I've seen him do it two times. I can kind of see there, like, there's a weird little like linking in the bands there, and then it roundhouse kicks them because they don't see it come in. That's one of them. It depends what I've got on me. I do a lot of impromptu magic. I do a lot of borrowed stuff. So I'll often do crazy mans, because I will keep rubber bands on me. I'll do, what else do I tend to do? I love like coin on hand, coin under watch, just jazz stuff. Like, I think that's good. I'll often do like Angle Zero by Madison with coasters. So if I'm in a coffee shop, I can tear a coaster off, a corner off a coaster under someone's cup, hide the corner somewhere when they're in the toilet or whatever, put the cup back down on their own coaster. So I'll lift, so I'll say, like, it'll come up, do you want to see some magic? Yes, whatever. And then I'll take their coaster from under their cup, cover in the corner, and do the routine. And then it becomes like that. So it's Angle Z with like a borrowed thing. And then really, it'll be whatever I'm like working on at the time. But oftentimes it'll be Lux. Lux will be the one, because I have it on a keychain all the time ready to go. So often it will be Lux. So Angle Z, not my effect. Crazy Man's Handcuffs, not my effect, but I will do Lux because it gets the craziest reactions. And it's so practical. It's so easy to do. And then, like, yeah, it depends on who else I'm falling to. I often use Peter Turner's Star Sign Revelation too, his proper Star Sign Revelation. That's got me millions of miles out of it over the years. What three tricks do you wish you came up with from other creators and why? Oh, Bizarre Twist by Paul Harris, definitely one. Sinful by Wayne Houchin. And what? Three tricks. Crazy Man's Handcuffs. I wish I'd come up with that. I'd do it so often. Or Angle Z, because I do it so often. Rafferty Cooper. Oh, good old Rafferty, who's blowing up on social media. Go and check him out. Young Magician of the Year. Uber talented. Grew like 3 meters taller since the first time I met him. How do you do it, Lloyd? It, as in every new magic idea you create. I do it by being a bit relentless, which is, and give myself some sort of rule. So I think about what I want. I think about how I should look, regardless of what methods exist and what we think can exist. So if I think about, I want a coin going through a glass, I think about it, I imagine it like CGI. And then I write myself a list of rules, which is like, okay, can't use this method, can't use that. I write down all the methods that already exist. And then I just get relentless and like just keep working and working and working and working and working at it. And once you've dismissed that you're not allowed to touch anyone else's method, then the only methods that are left are ones that haven't been done. You just haven't discovered them yet. And then you're in blue ocean territory and you can have a lot of fun and it leads you to other areas. So I've said this before, I have a very relentless attitude. I don't settle or try not to settle of anything that doesn't look like how I picture it in my mind. And then I do my utmost, and it's an impossible task, but I do my utmost to really heavily avoid other people's methods as much as I can. I think it's so boring seeing tricks, which are just tiny, tiny, tiny variations on other people's stuff, and then people trying to pump it out like this their own. I just think that's just a different thing altogether for me. Pigcake 69. How can I lose my virginity? Come to Wales. We have a whole host of sheep that are waiting for you. This is from, I think it's from Bert Villain Waver. He said, so, okay, it's very small on my screen. But he says, so I got called to do a Got Talent show on TV. And I turned it down with extreme enthusiasm. Reason being, the talent coordinator wanted my audition to be 2 minutes. The fuck am I going to do with 2 minutes? So I turned it down because I don't want to be like a monkey. Because I felt like a monkey being asked to do a trick. Then when I saw the other magicians perform under the same weird talent coordinator, they went way beyond 2 minutes. Did I make a mistake turning it down, or did I dodge a bullet here? Listening from Apple Podcast, brother, miss you, Lloyd. I miss you too, man. Met Bert in the Philippines many, many years ago in Manila. One of like those people that you meet and you just know that like if he lived in your town, he'd be your best friend. He's one of my guys. I think, oh, it depends. Like, it depends what your goals are. I know what they're doing. What they're doing is they're telling everyone they need it to be 2 minutes because they naturally assume they're going to run over. If they and they have a finite amount of time they can display you on TV for. If they said that the allotted time is 5 minutes, then everyone's act would be 10. By thinking in their heads, right, we've got 5 minutes to fill, tell them it's 2 minutes, we know they're run over. That's what the sort of the goal was. But it depends. Do you want to be on TV? Do you want to be a got talent magician? And what will that do for you? Like, if are you looking to promote your performing brand and get booked more regular, then do it. You know, I think it can, as long as you get through and you do a good job, then there's nothing to lose. And if not, and you have no interest in that type of thing, then maybe no. But yeah, the 2 minute thing, if you went, I think if they'd said that to me and I wanted to get on a Got Talent show to promote myself, I do know more about these shows than the average person, then I would have known in my head, actually, that's more like 4 or 5 minutes. But maybe reapproach. That was next year. And hindsight is a wonderful thing, right? Predict the time, how long your thing would last, and make that part of the reveal. Great question, though. Great question. Hardest part of getting into the magic industry. Knowing what skill you bring. Most people are like, I want to be in the magic industry. Hire me. I say, what can you do outside of performing magic? And they go, Like, you've got to be a bit of a polymath at times, or be, you either got to be like a bit of a, like a somebody who's a bit of a fixer. Like, for me personally, I can do a bit of everything. I get calls constantly. Lloyd, can you help out with this video? Or Lloyd, can you overlook what's wrong with this graphic design? Lloyd, why is this trick not hitting? You've got to kind of be a bit of a jack of all trades, master of none, but be able to be a bit of a fixer, you know? Or be very, very good at one thing. Depends what part of the industry. Like, you've got to be like, you know, are you a phenomenal videographer, phenomenal video editor, phenomenal package designer, phenomenal trick creator? I mean, that's the one I think most people want, because they think, oh, you know, like, I just come up with the idea, get paid, peace. But there's so much more to it. So you've got to kind of look at, like, what are the skills that these magic companies are needing, and go for it. Do they need a new marketer? Do they need a new social media manager? And then ask yourself, really, am I the right person for the job? I know of people in the past in certain roles that have come in like, yo, I'm a sick magician, like, can create some good magic. I know you need a marketer or a social media manager, or I know you need a graphic designer, whatever it's going to be. I can also do that too. So let's just, like, you know, since I'm a magician, let's do it. And they bring them on board, and it's like, oh, turns out, like, you suck at one of those skills. But you are a damn good magician, and you've even got a name as well. But, like, crap, we're kind of stuck with you now. So ask yourself, like, are you actually dope of what you're pertaining to say you are, outside of just being a magician? You know what I mean? And also put yourself out there. Do things. So many people come to me asking for work, and they say, like, I'm amazing at video editing. I'm like, sick. Show me your best 3 trailers. And they're like, oh, I haven't got any. I don't have anything to show. You're like, well, dude, like, I can't. Oh, I'm sick of graphic design. It's sick. Show me your work. I don't have any. Like, if I've ever been in those scenarios in the past, I go off and I create a body of work and I bring it to them and say, you go, I didn't have anything. This is what I can do. Got to be proactive. The biggest thing, though, is the magic industry is like any industry. We've got to work alongside people. You could be the best at anything, but if you are against a guy who's only 80% as good as you, but they are... You could have a conversation with them and you can work alongside them for up to 7 days a week for some parts, some roles. You know, some jobs are like normal jobs, 40 hours a week, 7 days a week, 5 days a week, whatever it's going to be. You're not going to hire the person that's the best, but they're annoying. You're going to hire the person that's pretty good, but you can socialize with, you can hang out with, because these people are going to become your best friends. You know, whether they're your work best friends or your actual best friends, these people are going to be the people you align yourself with and spend the majority of your life with going forward. You've got to be chill, you've got to be easygoing, you've got to be hardworking, you've got to not be a, you know, you've got to just be a non-toxic person. And that'll, you know, they say, if you ever read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, the people who work their way highest up the chain are often not the most qualified, but they have the best people skills, or they have the best, like, networker. You've got to be that guy. You've got to be that person, that girl, whoever it's going to be. Next question. We want to see some of your mentalism, but good mentalism. No more cards, please. Greetings from Spain. All right, man. Check out my old trick called Cypher. Check out the stuff on my Patreon. Check out some tricks. I'm not really a mentalist. I've just vowed to stop doing mentalism to an extent. I'm going to go back to magic, so maybe you're not allowed to see that stuff no more. Go through my back catalog. It's there. Next one. Favorite fairy liquid flavor? The yellow one. Is it lemon? Definitely. That's the most important question of the day. Have you got any advice on how to have good and productive practice sessions? Do you have any warm-up exercise before practicing to avoid repetitive injuries? None at all. I have no advice on avoiding repetitive injuries, but I have a deck of cards in every single room and a coin in every single room, and I'm constantly picking them up. And I'm just, whether they just sit in my hand and I'm just playing with them, but almost all the time. And not so much anymore, because I'm fairly proficient, but like at least every day, there's 3 hours a day now, I have a deck of cards or a coin or an object in my hand. It used to be that I would just never take them out of my hand, and it'd be like 10 hours a day, every waking hour. But now it's more like at least 3 hours of the day, the cards are in my hand. And that's it. They are a part of me. They're an extension of me. I find it really hard to record this episode without holding a deck. And the only reason I'm not is because I don't want the sound to be messed up. So, and also, I've refined my arsenal of sleight of hand down to only the most basic stuff that I need. Only like I have a couple of controls, couple of color changes, couple of certain moves. And those are the things I just do constantly with the deck. Boom, 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 back and forth, over and over and over and over again. Fear not the man that practiced 10,000 different kicks. Like fear the man that practiced one kick 10,000 times. It's kind of like the mantra I live by with card magic and coin magic. I just, personally, the stuff that I practice is the same few things hundreds of thousands of times. But that's a great question. Good question. What have been your biggest successes in magic creation, life as a person for yourself outside of magic and relationships as a father and a husband? All right, so biggest successes in magic was probably becoming more successful after quitting E. I was told, under no certain terms, that the only reason people knew who I was or cared about me was because I was on that team. And so when I quit them, I thought, oh my God, I'm probably not going to make it. You know, I was drilled into me, sort of like one of those people that think that they'll never make it without their spouse or whatever it is. You know, they get sort of like gaslit into thinking they're worthless and stuff. And so, so I didn't know how I'd fare sort of on my own two feet. And to go off and be literally more than 10 times successful in every area, whether you measure that metric by sales volume, by viewership, by feedback or people responding, like every single metric, even including like wealth. I don't like to talk about money and things, but every single metric has gone up by 10, at least at the basic. And I never thought that would, I didn't think that would happen. So that's my biggest success in magic creation. I think, like, you know, I don't know how to put it, or life maybe. Kind of a drunk thing. I'm really proud again, though, of Lux. I keep saying that. Really proud of Lux. Really proud of Dex. Really proud of Cognito. Those three things are dream product projects. The dream. They're dream tricks. They were dream things that, like, oh, if I want to be able to read someone's mind without them ever say or giving anything away to know the card. Cognito does that. I wanted an index that fit in skinny fit jeans. It was ultra, ultra, ultra fast. And me and Javier came up with that, and a really good project to go with it. And then Lux was, I wanted something, what Lux does. And I'm, yeah, those things are my biggest successes. I'm super proud of them. Life as a person outside of magic relationships. Outside of magic and relationships, biggest, okay, so outside of magic and relationships in life, probably breaking out of the cycle of, that can happen in like small towns. And I went to school. I was told, because I had an extreme eczema on my hands. So I actually did my GCSEs, which are like the SATs in America. I did all of mine on a computer because I couldn't handwrite. So all of mine were done on computer because my hands used to be bandaged up. I was still up until the age of like 18, 19, when it started to clear up a little bit. And I was told I would never do any work with my hands whatsoever. I couldn't write. Literally, my handwriting is still terrible. So I did all of my exams on computer. So I was told I'd never be successful. I was also told that because I had this attitude in school where I barely went. I had 27% attendance my last year. I was told that I would never amount to anything. And now, now I'm in this position, which is unreal. It seems like I'm in a dream. So I sort of broke that cycle of like not really breaking out of the hometown, not really doing anything, especially with my hands for a living. And now it's like, yeah, this is happening. So that's probably like that. I'm really, you know, I think it's a big success. And as a father and a husband, I didn't want to be a halfway dad, and I don't have a dad. So I wanted my kids to have the full experience. So I used to drink. I used to party all the time. I used to put like $1,500 in the pub a month. And I was fat, unhealthy. There's a history of heart disease on my grandfather's side of the family. So I wanted to be like, I quit traveling. I was traveling the world constantly. I quit drinking 4 years ago. I try and devote as much time as possible to my kids. I think like Thomas is really benefiting from that. Like, he doesn't have an iPad yet. And he's four. And so like, he's been moved up a year in his reading. He's in the top section for readers in the year above. And the teacher said she thinks that a large part of that is because he doesn't have an iPad. So he's not, he's not one of these kids on his iPad at home. I'm trying like to be like a really hands-on, practical dad. Like, I don't want him to be on a computer game. I want him to scrape his knees. I want him to fall out of trees. I want him to have real experiences as a kid. And I'm really proud that we're doing that. Me and Kaylee are doing that with Thomas, and now hopefully Michael as well, as he gets older. He starts to grow up a little bit. And as a husband, just devoted and love her. And me and Kaylee it's never like us, if there's ever like arguments, it's always like me and Kaylee versus the problem. It's never us against each other. She's my best friend. And I'm just very, 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 very lucky. Very, very, very lucky. So that's probably it. Probably best things. And also the other thing I'm really, outside of big success, is having this amazing house that we have. This house that we're renovating in our hometown. It's not exactly a cheap place to buy. We don't have any debts. So that's a crazy one. Like, so we've done this with no debts, like no credit cards, no car finance. We do have a mortgage, really small mortgage, but in terms of like, we don't owe anybody anything. And that's like really, like really. And I also like in the sense that like Kaylee doesn't have to work either. So she could be at home and raise the kids until they're, because you don't get these years back. So I was really proud to be able to do all of that and be in this position. Probably oversharing right now. How did I start being magic? My grandfather was in a traveling fairground circus. He learned magic from a magician on the road. This is going back, 60 years. He would be in his 90s almost now. Nearly 100, actually, if he was still alive. And then he started teaching me magic because like my skin was so bad, to get my dexterity levels up. So he started showing me that. I fell in love with it. He didn't do your standard tricks. He did interesting, more creative things. Started me going. Then I saw two things happen. I saw David Blaine's advert on TV. Well, first of all, I went to see Wayne Dobson. And when I was between 5 and 7 years old, waking to meet him backstage, somebody showed me a card trick. I don't remember the next 2 weeks of my life because it was real magic. And then I saw Blaine's advert for the Peugeot cars where he did Think of a Card. And it changed. And I'd never seen magic done like that, street magic. And those sort of three pivotal moments in my life put me on this path? That's the question. Is it possible to introduce us to some books? This is from Joel White Piggy. Books, videos, everything about misdirection. I believe it's crucial. It's a crucial point in doing good close-up magic. Any recommendations? I don't have any strict recommendations, but I like some of the best misdirection artists for me that I've seen are people like, there's the Lap DVD by Dave Ortiz and Jan Frisch, and there's a lot of misdirection stuff in that. But I tend to look at who's good at misdirection-based magic. So people like James Brown, amazing British magician, fucking one of the best of all time. Tommy Wonder is an amazing artist when it comes to misdirection. There was a name on the tip of my tongue just now, though, and I'm going to kick myself for not saying it. David Stone has phenomenal misdirection skills. And Card Under Glass, J.C. Wagner. And also, oh my God, I seen him lecture at Blackpool a couple of years back. Magic in the Mountains, Garrett Thomas is incredible. But also Garrett Thomas does projects with this guy, Doc Eason. Those people are phenomenal too. And there's a whole host of other people that have fantastic misdirection. But look at those people and then look at the projects and books that they've put out around it. For me, they're the type that I think are phenomenal. So look for those names, and then you'll find the material. And we got okay, couple more questions. These are not all the questions that came in, but these are the ones I managed to drop in here. You've mentioned many times that you do not do gigs, so you are probably a social performer. What is your take on performing socially? I think you get a lot of luxuries as a social performer. You don't need everything that you do to be able to be immediately reset, so you can do big preparations. You also get to give that feeling, I think, of real magic, whereas you can, but if I do an invisible deck to table one and I do it to table two, suddenly they're not going, oh, that's not spontaneous. It's almost like it's inherently baked in that it's a rehearsed act. It's something that's performed over and over again. So we get these luxuries of being able to do these bigger effects that seem spontaneous. They seem organic. They seem like real magic. The other thoughts I have on this is that I don't like being the star of the show. I don't like walking up field saying, look at what I can do. It doesn't suit me at all. I love watching people who can do it well. People like Harry Harrington, Craig Petty, they're amazing at it. And I binge watch everything they put out, but it's not my persona. I like interactions. I really like people. And I've said this in the past, I'd much rather, like I had a situation before, I was chatting to a guy who was fascinated about magic as an art. And I said, do you want to see something? Because he was so intrigued. And he was like, nah, man, I don't want to see it. I just love the concept of it, like the idea of making tricks. So instead of forcing him to watch tricks, I've seen a lot of people do. They say, do you want to see some magic? And someone says, not really, but I like your coat or whatever it's going to be. Instead of forcing magic down that person's neck, we just hung out and chatted and had a real connection. And you get that with performing socially. You can actually engage with people. There's nothing worse than watching a magician. Nothing worse than watching a magician say, hi, what's your name? I'm Cassandra. What do you do for a living? I've just qualified as an oil rig woman, working on oil rigs. Qualified last week. And there's nothing worse than watching a magician go, okay, cool, pick a card. And I see magicians do this over and over and over again. They forget people's names. They ask them questions where the person's so excited to tell them about their day or anything. And then the magician just glazes over and says, like, basically, like, fucking, okay. The beauty of socially performing is that you actually can chat and connect. And then when you do end up showing the magic, you're invested in each other. These people like you, hopefully, and they want to see you do well. And now they sort of believe in your magic a bit more because they are bonded with you. Whereas if you're rude to someone, and you can be a really nice, friendly performer and still make those faux pas where you accidentally don't give a shit about someone because you're so worried about getting to the next table or getting on every table in the evening or just machine gun magic in it, and you don't get those liberties or those luxuries with gigging. And also then, like, as a social performer, I can go out there and fine tune the things that I love and not have to worry about letting someone down. So I can if I've got a friend that's kind of into magic, or a friend that knows I do magic, and I've got a trick that I don't want to take it. Like, I think it's, when you perform magic, if you perform it on a stranger, like for me, I had that pivotal moment at Wayne Dobson where I was shown magic, and that put me on the path of becoming a magic creator, a magician. But if it was a bad trick, maybe I wouldn't be here doing this now. I'd be doing something else. You have a responsibility. You can make somebody a believer in magic, or you can put them on a path. And if you're only doing gigs, you don't get these opportunities to test out the new material, that might not work. And as a social performer, you can pull up a friend that kind of knows you a little bit and, yeah, I'm working on something new. Can I try this on you? Like, you know, I can try it. You can give me the feedback that other magicians can't, because you don't know what I'm doing. You don't know the secret. And you get that kind of, so, I mean, you can do that as a magician anyway, but socially you don't have the pressure of letting down your audience at a gig or anything. So you get to play a lot more. Okay, last few questions, then that's the end of the episode, folks. Where can I buy Ghosts? I think it's Ghost System V2. I want it so bad, but it's hard to find everywhere. Yeah, I think it sold out years ago. I might have some old prototypes laying around the house, which I'll put up on my website if I have them. Go to my site, www.lloyd.tv, sign up to my mailing list, and if I find any, I'll send out an email saying, hey, because I've got actually... I went to this on another video, maybe on my... So I have some of the old... I want to say, I have some of the old prototypes of the Ghost System laying around. But I don't have the full set. So I got to dig through all my parcels. Because I'm moving house, I've actually ended up coming across some of this stuff. Sign up to my mailing list, and I will let everyone know if I can find a couple of the old prototypes, and I'll be able to sell them to you. But as far as remaking it, I hope it's never put back on sale in wherever it's sold out from, and we'll go from there. Stu Etheridge, how would you say your outlook on life, magic, and the universe has changed since leaving E and quitting alcohol? Absolutely love the show, by the way. Oh, Stuart Etheridge. Oh, man, this guy's a legend. Flight instructor. Keeps trying to get me to go on a small airplane with him as the pilot. I'm terrified of flying. Oh, yeah. P.S. When are we going flying? Yeah, never, man. I don't want to... I've seen the news lately, dude. No. You maybe. All right. Tuesday. We're going, no, I don't know. Maybe I might take you on the offer, man. It's so kind of you, but I'm fucking terrified. I've developed this phobia of flying since the pandemic, and it's crippling. It's crippling. But outlook on life, magic. Life is fucking beautiful. And I've always loved life. I've always been really appreciative of, like, my surroundings, my friends, and my family. I've always voiced that. I've always said, I don't really, like, my grandfather was, we used to go for walks and we'd get ice cream when I was a kid. And he was born during he grew up during the Blitz, during the bombings in London. And came from absolute poverty, like genuine poverty. And going back through his family records, and they think that his mother died because they literally couldn't afford the medicine to give her. That's what it seems like. So actual poverty. And then he was on his own. He ran away from home, age 12. And never saw his family again. And we used to go for walks, and we'd be walking down by the beach, and he'd say, like, I feel like I'm living in heaven. I'm with you, my grandson, and we were walking on the beach, and I get 3 hot meals a day and a roof over my head. This is a man who at one point stowed away on a ship, and this is a man who lived on a traveling circus, comes from poverty. Like, and he would tell me this, because I come from poverty too, not like in the same way he did from, like, back in the 1920s and the 30s, single mum working 2 jobs. We lived in a flat, and yeah, like, I didn't have the same stuff the other kids had. So I've always appreciated stuff. And going from, like, at the time, like, in a toxic environment, a company I was working at, I was drinking heavily to sort of cope with these things. And then since then, I'm now a father of 2, married to the woman of my dreams. I couldn't be luckier. I've got everything I've ever wanted, and it's all thanks to magic. So I've always been, like, overwhelmingly positive. I've always been really thankful and appreciative. But but my outlook on it all is just to, I like try and breathe it in every chance I get. I really do. I know a lot of people say this. I know a lot of like influencers will post like a yoga pose photo and say like breathe in the moments that take your breath away. But like, I like every morning I'll go for a walk and I'll like soak it up. And it might sound a bit pretentious, but you know, we ain't here for long, and we don't. You know, I do know that I could be. I've been in much worse positions. I know there are people in much, much worse positions. I've worked really, really hard to put me and the family where we are. And I don't take that for granted, ever. And it's partially why I'm so terrified of flying. I keep saying to Kaylee, you want to go on holiday? We could literally all die in a plane crash. And this amazing life that we've got for ourselves would be fucking gone for the sake of going in a pissing airplane. I used to be a daredevil, like crazy, like somewhere else. Like I used to go cliff diving, quarry jumping, broke almost every fucking bone in my body, boxing, everything. And now I'm too even afraid to go skydiving, which is one of my big dreams, because I think like you hear about the news, that woman in Devon the other day, she went skydiving and died in front of her son and her husband. Like, oh my God, you lost all of that. Like, because you were thrill seeking. And I don't do any of that stuff anymore. So my outlook is like to really cherish and nourish what I have here and just be thankful. But I know you are the best of the best flight instructors, and I would actually come flying with you. It's just about finding time in the schedule. So everything I said about tongue in cheek about flying. I was genuinely thinking about it the other day, actually, and I was looking for the video you sent of sitting on the plane. So if you've got it, can you send it back to me? Because I can't find that video. I actually do think it would make great content to come and fly with you and help me overcome my newfound fear of flying. So, yeah, if you're still down, I'm still down. Or I'm down. I'm newly down. Adam Rose, are there any magic products you've released you regret or aren't proud of? Yes, I think so. I think, I put out a trick called Maverick when I was 16. That was terrible. It had a cool visual moment, but it was not practical at all. I'd put it out because I just thought the visual was cool, but everything else around it was not good. So there was that. I looked at the marketing behind Lux, and I think in retrospect, when you look back at all the feedback from it, that it overwhelmed the product in a negative sense. And I kind of regret that sort of being played out the way it was, because I still think now that some people don't think it was good. I mean, obviously you can objectively think it's not good if it's not for you, but some people think it was like a bad product, or like it didn't do what it said, or that there aren't magicians all around the world still doing this like heavily. So I kind of like feel bad about that. I don't think Pro Caps came out as good as it did, if I'm being honest. I think Pro Caps could have been better. I think that edge could have been thinner. In hindsight, look, going back over it, you know, I think I would have done that differently, or found a way to improve that. Which at the time when we were working on it, the idea was so much fun, so good. Even though we were out and doing it, the feedback would be that not everyone was happy with the quality but the design of the build, which I can get on board with. So being completely honest with myself. And then I created the Vanishing AirPods that got put out with E after I'd quit there, and they were done wrong. They weren't as what I designed, and so I'm kind of like, obviously I was contracted to that company when I designed them, created them, so I couldn't have moved them away. But yeah, I wish, you know, I wish they hadn't been done. Brandon Ellis, if I wasn't working for Murphy's Magic, what would you be doing? That's the last question, I think. It's the last question. And this is the guy who got a high-paying job using Lux, and he sent me an email. It's how we met. If I wasn't working for Murphy's, what would I be doing? It's this. Same thing. I mean, the beauty of what I do with Murphy's is that it's just what I do anyway. I love creative magic. I love putting a project together. I love video. I love design. I love packaging. Everything that comes with the project, that is what I do for a hobby. I just love it. So I would just be doing the same thing, but on my own. The beauty of working with Murphy's is I get to work with some of my best friends, George, Javier, Titanus, the legend. I get to do that, and I get to do it like on a big scale. So maybe the question could be considered as if I wasn't doing, because like Murphy's, I do the same thing that I do with Murphy's that I do anyway, which is just create magic and just have fun with it. No, maybe that's not the right way of phrasing it. It's not so much having fun with it. It's, I like, for me, my brain, it's very black and white. And for me, like when I create a trick, even if it's completely private, like I have to bookend that trick. Like it has to have a name. It has to have a full thing behind it. And even like for private, I mean, like literally tricks that will never see the light of day, I design them like a project. Like I'll always have a little video to go with it. I'll always have like a write-up to go with it. Like behind closed doors, every trick that I create is like a full finished project. So this is what I do for fun. But if I mean, outside of magic, if it wasn't this, like what would I be doing if I wasn't doing magic maybe, which is my whole life? It'd be probably renovation, like renovating houses, having a whole load of houses, renovating them. I just enjoy the manual labor side of it. Whatever it is, though, I think video, filming video, editing video would always be a big part of my life. I do love photography on the side. And so probably like pursue, okay, I did that renovation channel for fun when we started doing this, just literally for a laugh with Kaylee. Probably do something like that more full on. Or I've always said there's a couple of jobs that I love. A would be a trash man or a bin man in the UK. I love that because I work in an office. Like I work on my arse sitting down. I got fat as hell from it. But those people, they have government pensions. They're up early every morning. I'm up early every morning. They walk around all day till like 2 PM. And then they're home early. They get massive holidays. Like the local government here can have like weeks and weeks of holidays every year. And I don't have any shame. Like I would do anything. I don't care about people thinking you're a trash man or a bin man or garbage man, as you say in America. That shit doesn't bother me. I'm not one of those types of people. So maybe something like that. I've actually said that for like, since I was little, I would love that job. I think it's really cool. Or a postman, because they're out, again, up early, walking around all day, delivering letters. I wouldn't mind being a postman. What else wouldn't I mind being? Those are the jobs that I've always like looked, like if I've ever thought, oh God, I'm a bit magic burner. Those are the jobs that I've looked for on like job websites years and years ago. And whatever it is though, it wouldn't be anything that I wouldn't want to be, I'm not bothered about earning money. High paying is not on the, if there's like a list of like things that like, oh, what I'm looking for, the as long as it pays the bill so we can have a holiday every year, that's the only thing that would be on my bullet list. The things that are important to me would be physical, active, early mornings or early starts, home early, lots of holiday time, lots of family time a year, and working with good people. Like that's if that's kind of what I'd be doing outside of magic. I am the last person on earth that's money motivated. I think it's one thing to be able to cover your bills and be in a safe place financially and a comfortable place financially, like me and Kaylee are. But there are some people that just chase money and they are like evil for it. That ain't me, dog. I ain't that guy. So it's something like that. Or I mean, I don't know, coffee shop. I wouldn't mind working in a coffee shop. I'm not very good at barista style making of coffees, but it would be cool to have something like that where I can just show like the regular some magic tricks, have some conversations, have some fun, and something where you wouldn't take your work home with you every day. Another one. The one, I think like there's not many downsides to the work that I do at all. The only one that I can sort of envisage is that I'm never off the clock. And that's not just Murphy's, I mean magic in general. We live in an online world. Everyone is in a different time zone, and I get every week hundreds of messages from people just wanting my attention for something, for some reason, whether it's help with something, whether it's advice, or whether they want to show me something. It's every hour of the day I will get a message, at least one message. And then, so the, you know, that, and that's kind of like taking your work home with you. And I'm very, it's why I don't respond to hardly anyone. It's why I don't get my phone number out. It's why I'm not very contactable, because I'm trying my best to separate. Like, I see magic is my life. Magic, creating magic, in every sense of the word, is my life. But I have to separate that life from work. Because I eat, sleep, breathe magic. I also have a business side to magic, or a working side to magic. And I have to somehow separate that. And the big one really is that contactability, that being reachable. So most of you will be aware that if most of you that have tried to contact me or have contacted me, and you'll know it's not through being rude. It's like I highly value my time away from the internet, away from my phone, and with my family. And really, like, if it's an important, urgent message, that will get through to me, and it obviously is responded. On the whole, most things are. If it, you know, most I will always choose family time first, always, and then anything pressing will get seen to, in due course. So yeah, that's what I'd be doing outside of magic. I'm a very basic person. If I could find a way to provide for the family by walking my dog on the beach, because I don't care about flash cars, because I don't care about million-dollar mansions, because I don't care. I mean, none of my clothes I've bought myself. They're all old clothes. They're all things that I found these shorts today in an old bag of clothes from my mum's attic from when I was 15. When I was 15 years old, I was like, they're perfect. Put those on for the day. I don't buy my own clothes. I am so basic. I'm not a scruff. I probably am a scruff, but I just have no. I don't give a fuck, man. I'm fortunate enough that I could go on holiday to the Maldives, but I would 10 times over choose a caravan holiday with the family, because I'm happy. I'm just content. So anyway, that's goddamn, that was the story of my life. Overshare Central. That's episode 2 of Trapdoor Radio. We've gone over the magic news, what's been happening in the magic world. I've humbly bragged about myself for the last hour, which makes me feel sick on the inside. So apologies if I sound like an arrogant twat. But we'll be back in episode 3. If you have any more questions, send them over. We'll do a smaller Q&A in the next episode. But we'll be back to talk about magic news, magic music, my thoughts and theories on magic in the next Late Night 108.9 Trapdoor Radio episode, coming to your ears in a week's time from now. Peace.
There's a beginning. And magic.
You're listening to 108.9 FM. Adjust your frequencies. Fine-tune your mind and brains as you prepare to fall through the trap.
The universe.